I'm Julianda Lynn Hatton, and you're listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. This series will discuss the prophet Joseph Smith and the authenticity of the gospel he restored. I'll be speaking with Michael R. Ash, author of the book of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Hi, Michael Ash.
Hi, Julianne.
We're continuing our series about the language in the Book of Mormon.
Wonderful.
Let's talk about the word chiasmus. Where does that come from?
Well, it derives from the Greek word that comes from the 22nd letter of the Greek alphabet, chi, which is an X. And it basically means kind of X marks the spot. A chiasmus is a literary form, almost a poetic form, I guess, if you will, that takes the reader into levels, almost like an outline that you might have for a term paper or something, where each level progressively brings the reader into a kind of a pinnacle or center point, and then leads the reader out through the exact same themes, except in the opposite direction. For instance, you might have a level A, B, C, D, and then the same topics are repeated in D, C, B, and A. And this was written intentionally to highlight the D part in the middle, so the reader was focused to the central or main point of it. And like I said, almost in a poetic form to maybe help even for a mnemonic device, perhaps.
How was chiasmus discovered?
Well, the early biblical scholars started recognizing that there were these literary forms in Hebrew texts. And what's interesting is in the Bible, it's hard to find a lot of these forms, especially chiasmus, because they were kind of obliterated by the translation. The King James Bible does a great job bringing it into kind of the old world English, but gets rid of some of these chiasms. And so scholars were searching and recognizing some of these literary forms, and then eventually they started giving names to the different ones and breaking them down to different categories. And it really, as far as the direction it took in Mormon studies, it started coming to a highlight in the 1960s, when scholars were talking a little bit more about these chiasms and what they meant from literary texts.
Where does John Welch come in?
Well, John Welch was in a mission in Germany, and on their P-Day, he and his companion decided to go to a Catholic-taught class on the New Testament. It was like a seminary for people that want to become priests. He had seen a flyer, and he thought, okay, this would be a great way to help strengthen our German-speaking skills, and it was a lecture about the New Testament. And they were actually encouraged by the mission president to become immersed in the culture, and so they thought this would be a great way to spend their P-Day. So they attended this lecture, and the instructor talked about how he just had read this book that talked about this literary pattern, chiasmus, in Matthew, and how Matthew made much more sense when you read it from a chiasmic structure. And when they had left the lecture, they had stopped at a bookstore, and John Welch found this book that the instructor had referred to, where that he had just read. And so he bought a copy and started reading it, and woke up, and I think it was either that same night or shortly after, woke up in the middle of the night thinking, holy smokes, if this is a sign of how the Hebrews wrote, I wonder if we can find chiasms in the Book of Mormon. And so he turned to some pages and found actually two German words that stood right out. I don't remember what the words were, but they were stacked on top of each other. And that looked, again, like the apex of a chiasm. And so he started exploring more and found that there were chiasms in the Book of Mormon. He woke as a companion up all excited about it.
Can you give me an example of chiasmus?
Yeah, there's several of them in the Book of Mormon, and sometimes it's a matter of chiasmus by themes. And I'll give maybe two short examples. In Mosiah 5, 10 through 12, so we've got a couple of verses there, and I won't read the whole thing, but if you look in your scriptures between those handful of verses there, 10 through 12, we see that it starts off talking about whoever takes upon them the name of Christ, and it ends up talking about, again, who will take the name. And then it works its way into being, if anybody's called by any other name, then they'll be found on the left hand of God. And the Lord says, and I would that you should remember that this is named that, and they should never be blotted out. And we read the exact same thing, but remember and blotted out. And the very center, the apex of it, talks about that, you know, to take heed not to do transgression. So the whole point of that chiasm and the main theme is talking about sinning and transgression. And if you transgress, then you're going to be ending up not taking upon you the name of Christ and found on the left hand of God. And so that's kind of the central theme of it. The one that I find most fascinating, however, is in Helaman chapter 6, verses 7 through 13. And again, there's several things starting off from 7 working down to 13 where it talks about peace in the land and a different manner of gold that they found and precious metals and so forth. But at the very apex, we find the name of Zedekiah, and then paralleled, it says, for the Lord, which in Hebrew, the godly suffix is Yah, which is found in Zedekiah. So the Zedekiah and Lord are the parallel part there. And again, it's talking about, you know, those that follow Christ and of course, in the context of bringing people to the land of Lehi and the promised land and so forth. And it's just fascinating that this Hebrew part there, it's not just using a parallel of an exact word, but a parallel of a theme and the Lord and the Yah part of that word. And that's something that it'd be impossible, I would think, for, you know, somebody like Joseph Smith to know on his own.
So what it really does is I'm looking at the overview of Helaman 6, 7 through 13. It talks about peace in the land. It talks about travel, trade, gold. And then it crosses over and talks about the son of Zedekiah, refers to the Lord, and mm-hmm. then talks again about gold in the land, curious workmanship of all kinds, ends talking about economic prosperity, and then the last line is, and thus the 64th year did pass away in peace. So it's
in peace.
It's almost yeah. like an hourglass.
Yes, that's a great way to describe it. And that's where the X figure would be the hourglass figure, and that's kind of how the whole thing works. If you I guess for us, the hourglass makes almost a little more sense than the X, but that's the chiasm part of it is the X. So you start with a theme, work your way into the middle, the apex, and that's the most important part, and then work your way back out. And that's to always highlight what's important about it and to show those parallels. Like I said, it's a very intricate poetic form.
Don't you talk about this in Shaken Faith Syndrome as well?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating topic. And, you know, in Joseph Smith's day, you know, they didn't have a term chiasmus. Again, there were some scholars that knew that there were types of Hebrew poetry. Joseph Smith would have had to understood chiasms and would have had to intentionally plan these out to make any kind of sense, because the whole purpose of having a chiasm is, again, to have this apex where you're teaching an important point, and to think that he could work all this out, again, with, as we discussed before, without notes or having anything read back, is just unbelievable. So it just makes more sense that he was actually translating something that already contained the chiasms.
Well, if you look at poetry, and I've been told that poetry is a distillation of words. That's why it is so difficult to write. It is not something that could be quickly thrown together, for sure.
Yeah. Jack Welch has actually produced several articles and books on this topic. And if you look through the chiasms that he's found, some of the verses in the Book of Mormon make more sense, and you can understand, again, what the apex and the main point of that section is. And some of these span several chapters. In fact, that brings up another important point. You know, the critics, once again, you know, anytime there's any evidence for the Book of Mormon, you know, it's like, how can we argue this away? They say, well, you know, chiasms are kind of everywhere. You can find them in the Doctrine and Covenants. You can find them in English writings of the day. Well, the thing is that a chiasm can happen either by accident, or it can happen by, you know, an intentional, almost like a limerick or something like that. Jack Welch has put together 15 criteria that he sees that are important for it to be a true ancient chiasm. One is complexity, the length, you know, is there precise parallels? Is there really a point to the apex? And all these other ones disappear once you compare these 19th century chiasmus to the criteria that really would show that it's ancient, but the ones that are found in the Book of Mormon don't disappear. They actually fall right in line with what we would expect to find for a true ancient chiasmus.
Thank you, Michael Ashe.
Thank you, Julianne.
Thanks for listening to Faith and Reason on the Mormon Faircast. I'm your host, Julianne DeLynn Hatton, inviting you to keep the faith.
Michael R. Ashe is the author of the book Shaken Faith Syndrome, Strengthening One's Testimony in the Face of Criticism and Doubt, as well as the book Of Faith and Reason, 80 Evidences Supporting the Prophet Joseph Smith. Faith and Reason is produced by Tom Hatton with music courtesy of Arthur Hatton. The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily the views of Fair Mormon or The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. You can support this podcast by subscribing to it in iTunes and by rating it and writing a review. Questions or comments can be sent to podcast@fairmormon.org, or you may join the conversation at fairblog.org.